Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. And anyone who knows me knows I'm a morning person. I often share my mornings with a few special gals.
Almost time to wake my girls up.
Just heading out to my backyard to visit my chickens. There's Harriet and Tracy, Snickers and Janet, and oh yeah, Buff Orpington Becky. She's the chicken with the good feathers. Now, actually, it would take too long to introduce them all.
Good morning, ladies. Oh, nobody's up? Too dark. Okay, here we go. Come on.
Like so many before me, I'm a victim of something known as chicken math. You see, you start with just a couple birds, but pretty soon, it's impossible to resist getting more. And before you know it, you've got a whole flock. In my case, what began as a 2016 Christmas gift of three original hens is now a bustling coop with 25 gals and one mean little roo named Rakim. And I found a kindred spirit.
Currently, I have 8 chickens. That number has fluctuated over the years. I started with 3. I thought, you know, it's just my husband and I. We just need some eggs. 3 is a reasonable number of chickens. And then, as will happen, it's such a well-known phenomenon. People refer to it as chicken math. We wound up with a lot more than 3 chickens over the years. And they got a lot less practical in terms of breeds as the years went on as well. Now I just want to have the silliest looking chickens out there. My name is Tova Danovich, and I'm a freelance journalist and the author of Under the Henfluence, Inside the World of Backyard Chickens and the People Who Love Them.
It might seem a little strange to keep chickens in our backyards, especially in the urban landscape of Portland, Oregon, where Tova lives. Chickens aren't exactly what we think of as cuddly pets, and for many, they're just nameless, faceless food. But once you get to know them, it's clear there's so much more to these feathered fowl. I sat down with Tova to explore the wonderful and sometimes weird world of chickens and the people who love them.
You don't expect to fall in love with them. Like, they're just chickens when you get them. I knew I liked them well enough to take care of them, do all the things a responsible owner should do, but I really didn't think that they would kind of capture my heart. Once you start spending time with them and you learn more about, you know, chickens don't just come in those classic chicken colors. They have poofs on their head. They have funny bustles. You know, the ways that they're shaped makes them move differently. You just become really enchanted by the world of chickens, and suddenly you have to have all of the chickens around you all the time, and 3 just doesn't seem like nearly enough to see, you know, running around your yard.
The world of chickens includes chickens, but also the people who are chicken people. One of your first chicken people in your life was your grandmother. Tell me about her and her chickens.
My family came over to, you know, settle in North Dakota. We have multiple generations of farmers. And she started telling me stories about how her mother had chickens when she was growing up. She raised them for what was known as egg money at the time, and is a hugely common phenomenon if you have any farming family in your history. And that's where the women got to contribute to the household by raising chickens. And she was so excited to tell me all these stories about chickens, and we started bonding over them, even though her experience of having chickens, you know, back in mid-century America is very different from the world of chickens today. By and large, these were food-producing animals. You would have a flock of, you know, maybe 100 or so. 3 is a big difference. So having chickens on this small scale in our small urban backyards with, you know, zoning requirements and everything that comes with it, allows us to get up and close with chickens in a way that I think was not possible in the past. Backyard chicken people like myself, we're naming our chickens. We're building fancy coops for them, giving them treats. I take my chickens to the vet when they get sick. This is all very unrecognizable to someone from my grandma's generation.
I'm speaking with Tova Danovich, author of the new book, Under the Henfluence. And these are a few of Tova's chickens. Now, Tova and I are just two of the millions of people in the U.S. who raise chickens in our backyards. We are chicken tenders. And while we love the fresh eggs our hens give us, well, we also just love our hens. And they just might love us, too. You see, chickens can recognize our faces, and when they're happy, they can even purr. So it's no surprise that many of us form an emotional connection with our chickens, just like with any pet.
People often ask me what the worst thing about having chickens is, and I think it's that they die. They die for all kinds of reasons. I mean, everything wants to eat chickens and they can get sick. And you don't expect the depth of your connection with these animals. So I had these three chicks initially. I got them as day-old chicks. I raised them. They were in the coop outside. And I was trying to train my dogs and chickens to get along. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. And so when I lose this first chicken, you know, I start just crying and I'm surprised by how sad I am. And then more than that, I'm surprised by how sad my other two chickens were. And it was that moment, seeing how they were grieving for their lost flockmate, that really made me reframe my relationship to chickens, the way that I saw them. Because I think when we see animals that are grieving for the loss of another animal, that's a life that is important to them. And it's hard not to have that life be important to you as well. So that was kind of the moment when I realized that all my pretense about these being just like food-bearing animals had completely flown out of the window, was when I lost that first hen.
Listen, I have for 4 years now put up with the meanest little rooster. Oh my goodness. But gosh, the ladies in the flock like him so much. And I will not someday so much grieve the loss of Rakim, right? But absolutely keep him safe. Make sure he's in the coop at night. Make sure he's well fed, because mm-hmm. they're a little crew, right?
Yeah. And they're flock animals. I mean, a lot of people are familiar with the term the pecking order, which of course comes from chickens. Someone was studying chickens and realized that they had these very specific relationships to each other and a social hierarchy. They're very social animals. My flock is always having these little dramas where they have friendship cliques and then someone falls out for some reason and someone's getting picked on briefly and then they're back to being friends again. It's like a little soap opera in the backyard, which is amazing.
As the backyard chicken keeping boom continues to boom, right, as more and more of us are doing this, we also find that unlike our beloved dogs, cats, and other often furry animals, there isn't the same kind of sort of medical support for mm-hmm. our chicken friends.
Yeah, you know, chickens occupy such an interesting place in modern life because obviously billions of them are raised for food every year in these commercial settings. We still very much think of chickens as livestock, agricultural animals, and yet there are these hundreds of thousands of households and increasing that keep chickens in a backyard setting. And for many people like yourself, like me, they're pets. And the way that we take care of pets in modern society is when they get sick, we take them to the vet. The first few times something happened to my chickens that was beyond my capability to take care of with my little first aid kit and some YouTube videos, I started looking for a vet that could treat chickens. And even when I found some places where they said they treated them, they had never seen chickens before. You know, I had people take pictures of me in the waiting room holding my chicken because they're like, this is crazy. Why is there someone at the vet holding a chicken in their arms? You know, they've maybe never even seen a chicken in real life. So we're at this funny stage where, you know, people are just now really wanting to seek out veterinary care for chickens. And vets, of course, need experience treating these animals and being around them. It can be really difficult to find someone great. I'm lucky enough to be in Portland, Oregon, which of course, backyard chicken mecca over here. And we have an absolutely wonderful avian vet.
There's another part of chicken keeping that I just love the stories of, and this is about show chickens. Tell us a little bit about that part of the chicken world.
You know, I think people that don't know chickens have this idea of like, you have the little red hen, you have the white chicken, you have the black and white chicken, and they're all kind of chicken shaped. In reality, there are several hundred breeds, color varieties of recognized chickens out there. And then outside of that, you have all these mutt chickens that come in different shapes and sizes. So much like dogs, most of us are kind of familiar at least with the fact that dog shows exist. Those actually go back to chicken shows. Chicken shows were the first place that we were showing animals and saying, like, my animal is a little bit better than your animal, so let's get some breed standards where we can prove it. So today there are chicken shows all over the world. There's an amazing documentary called Chicken People, in addition to, of course, the chapter in my book that really goes deep into the world of chicken shows in a hilarious way. But people try to breed these chickens to be the closest to what is known as the standard of perfection as they can get. And it's this ideal that someone came up with for what this exact breed of chicken should look and be shaped like. And they take their birds all over the country to these shows where they can meet with other chicken people and judge these birds. And it's a really delightful environment. If you have one of these chicken shows in a place near you, I think it's a lot of fun to just go and see what's out there. But a lot of these people, you know, they're friends with the other chicken people that they meet at the shows. The only time they get to see them is this once a year in Ohio or in Boston or wherever else the big show is that's near to them. And they catch up and they talk about chickens, and it brings people from just so many walks of life together in a way that's really delightful and wholesome.
Don't leave the nest just yet. We're learning about how chickens can be used in therapy. Next on The Takeaway.
Carnegie Hall has welcomed a dizzying array of performers.
To have Andy Kaufman, Frank Zappa, and Birgit Nielsen and Horowitz on the same stage, it becomes this kaleidoscope of our history.
I'm Jessica Vosk. Join me for the new podcast, If This Hall Could Talk. It's all about our unique cultural history, as witnessed by one of New York's most beloved institutions. Carnegie Hall. Listen now wherever you get podcasts.
Hey, it's The Takeaway. I'm MHP, and we're on a journey through the wonderful and weird world of chickens. Our guide today is journalist Tova Danovich, author of the new book, Under the Henfluence.
In the book, I went out in search of a couple of programs where they use chickens as therapy animals. I find my chickens extremely therapeutic. It's very meditative. It's calming. But in a lot of these programs, you know, the chickens function as a social bridge. It's kind of like when you see someone on the street with a dog and you maybe don't want to talk to this complete stranger, but you'll say, can I pet your dog? Like, tell me about your dog. What's their name? So in the same way, you come together over these chickens, and it's a way to communicate with people. So one of the programs that I visit is in Minneapolis at the university. They have a therapy program for the college students where they bring in a number of different therapy animals. Some people come every week and they pet the dogs or they want to go visit the cats, but there are some people who are there for the chickens. The person who runs this program, Tanya Bailey, has silkies, which are like the Muppets of the chicken world. They don't look anything like a chicken as most people understand them. They're just fuzzballs. And they come there in this little basket and they sit on the table and the students come around and they pet this soft chicken and they ask questions about the chicken. And Tanya, who's doing the program, is asking them about their day and their classes and how they're doing. And if someone is struggling, you know, she directs them towards resources that might be helpful for them. And that's something that's super hard for anyone to seek out help when they need it. But having this ability to come together over chickens can be really helpful. And they're using things like that in nursing homes and other types of centers as well, because so many people have a connection with chickens in their past. You know, chickens show up in every culture all around the world in some form. They're small, they're approachable. People have stories about chickens and it's easy for them to share them with other people.
I mentioned my mean little rooster, Raquel. and in so doing, sort of gave away, I suppose, that not only is chicken life fragile, but particularly the life of roos. Can you talk a little bit about all the boys and a little bit about what we know about what happens with them?
I had an experience a few years ago, which many people eventually do, where even if you try to get chicks that are sexed ahead of time, it's not 100% accurate. Eventually, most people, you will get a rooster, even if you try your hardest not to. And in many urban and suburban areas, roosters aren't allowed. So as the backyard chicken movement has been taking off, it's meant even more so than before, there are a lot of these roosters with nowhere to go. And there are only so many places that can take in roosters. So this is becoming a huge issue. Roosters, by and large, are really kind of suffering under under the way we treat chickens today. In the egg industry at large, you know, we have a flock in the United States of 300 million hens that lay all of the eggs that you buy from the grocery store, wherever you are. These chickens are bred just to lay eggs. So we don't have anything to do with the roosters. They're worthless under the system that we've come up with. And so they're killed. It's a sad part of having chickens. You know, roosters used to be kind of the flock protectors. There's so many myths about the rooster in history. And today they're just kind of this worthless add-on to backyard chickens, even though they can be really sweet and wonderful or sometimes annoying.
So much more in the book. But maybe as you kind of take us out, you could tell us the story of Thelma and Louise.
So Thelma and Louise were my two rescue hens. They came from a battery egg farm. That's how most hens in the United States that lay our eggs, they live in cages their entire lives. And around the time of their first molt, at about a year and a half to 2 years old, they're killed. As I mentioned earlier, you know, we have these chickens that are bred just for egg laying. These are the ones where the males are useless. And then we have chickens that are raised for meat, which are known as broilers. And because those broilers grow so fast, so quickly, the price of chicken meat has gone down astronomically. So when you have these egg laying hens that are considered too old to lay eggs anymore, it's not even worth it to kill them for food. A lot of them are just landfilled, and it's really sad. And as I was researching this book, I came to find out that in the UK and Australia, there are these really popular organizations that rescue hens. And instead of having them be killed, they bring them into people's homes. So I drove, you know, 6 hours or so round trip to Washington to get these two scraggly red hens who like were scared of the sky when they got them from this farm. You know, they didn't understand treats. It took them a while to figure out how to do things that most chickens do naturally. And they arrived at home, you know, they're missing feathers all over the place. One's neck is just completely naked. But over the years that I had these hens, who I named Thelma and Louise, of course, they learned how to become chickens, and I got them during, you know, in 2020. So I'm stuck at home along with everyone else. And the thing that I did for fun is I watched these chickens and how they came to really like blossom in this new environment and learn how to be members of the flock. You know, they couldn't fly when I got them at first, and eventually their wings got strong enough that they managed to get some lift running around the yard. And it was just such a celebratory moment when they did all of these things that, you know, the rest of my flock did so easily. But it was something I really had to watch them come into. And it was a delightful experience. And they had laid like 500 eggs between the two of them before they both did pass away after I finished the book from various cancers, which is very common in these chickens that are bred to lay a bunch of eggs.
In the book, you ask the question, what is a good life for a chicken? Do you feel like you found an answer?
A lot of the things that I discovered really made my flock happy are just kind of meeting their basic needs. And, you know, as a human, it's really hard for me to think that like that's all it could be is, you know, food, shelter, place to go exploring, nice bugs and a little patch of sunshine. But I think for chickens, that's really all it comes down to is like they want a group of friends that's stable. They want a safe place to sleep. They do really like a treat and a special morsel like everyone else does. But I think their needs are really simple. And that makes it, I think, all the harder to see how much we don't give that to a lot of chickens in our agricultural system. Their wants are so simple, and they're so happy, and they really thrive when we give that to them, when we give them good lives, where they get to just be safe and give us some eggs in return.
Tova Danovich, freelance journalist and author of Under the Henfluence, Inside the World of Backyard Chickens and the People Who Love Them. Tova, thanks for sharing your stories with us.
Thanks for talking about chickens with me.